this year, Hawaii's legislature again considered a measure to allow medical aid in dying, and again the measure went down to defeat. Lawmakers said the bill lacks safeguards and that the community was divided over the issue. John Ratcliffe said their action was disconcerting and heartbreaking, especially for people like him. He's a stage 4 cancer patient and would have liked to choose the manner and time of his death in Hawaii. We talked back in January as the legislative session began. Today we're circling back to get his thoughts as advocates are already looking toward next year. Hi there, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Bethann.
Good to talk
Glad
to you.
Glad to be here.
I can imagine that you are.
Now, yeah.
As we talked about in the intro there, there were a lot of criticisms of the bill as it was, in some people's minds, poorly written, or there weren't enough specifics in it, or that there were too many slippery slopes, that the community was too divided, that there weren't safeguards, all of those things that I know that you heard because you were there. How do you continually to... You
First of all,
answer some of those.
Sure, the
criticisms.
Arguments that are used, those very arguments, are bogus and are clearly being put forth by people who don't want you to read the bill, because the bill is very specific. It follows the Oregon model, which is now 20 years old, but it is more difficult. It is a tougher bill. It requires, for example, that every patient be mentally competent when they go into this, that they have 6 months or less to live, that two doctors have given their permission for this, and that two requests have been made at different times in writing by the person who wishes to have the right to control his or her own time of death. So the fact of the matter is, the people who use those arguments use them because the people they're using them against never read the bill.
If they haven't read the bill and they are just saying what they've said, they still managed to gather enough momentum to kill the bill for this last session.
And it only took two votes.
So, yeah, very small margin.
No, I mean it took two people.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So a very, very small yeah. vote amount right. to be able to tank it for this last year.
Two people changed their vote.
But if it's not a matter that they either didn't read the bill or that the bill is not strident enough, do you find other reasons why the bill tanked?
I don't know what the word strident enough means.
Well, strident enough in the minds of the people who gave the criticism that it wasn't. So if that's what they had to say about it, and you've countered that by saying,
right.
here, take a look at it and
right.
read the bill, even if you discounted that for a moment, yeah. is there another reason why that the House was so opposed to this bill?
It wasn't that the House was so opposed to the bill. The fact of the matter is most of the people in the House support the bill. Over 30 of them support the bill. And as you know, in the Senate it passed 22-3. I mean, it didn't pass on a whim. They sent over an excellent piece of legislation. The reason the bill didn't go forward is because the House Health Committee chair didn't have sufficient number of votes in her committee to vote the bill out of committee. Had she had the votes to vote it out of committee, we would have then been able to take it forward and it would have passed, I'm sure. But as it was, she didn't have enough to get it out of committee, and then it became a question of whether or not those dissidents who wanted to, frankly, take out Speaker Joe Suki would use the bill as a device, a political device, to take Joe out internally. And that's what they did.
So this became a generational weapon?
This became that's what I've called it, yes. And I think most of your listeners out there do not understand that we're seeing a generational revolution in our community, that the people who are now in the legislature weren't born when the Beatles were around, you know? I mean, these people have been born since 1994, 96, 98. You know, we've got people in the legislature now who are in their early 20s. So, you know, they really haven't had a background in the community here. And there's going to be a lot of education that's going to have to go on right now in the interim with those younger people.
So what's happening? How do you make the case to someone who is young, who regards life differently and maybe feeling the pressure from a constituency that says, don't vote for this?
Well, I think that's what we have to do, is make that in their interest to vote for it, as well as it being, of course, good public policy. I have absolutely no doubt that this is excellent public policy. And I believe the community thinks so as well, with over 80% of the community being in favor of medical aid in dying here in Hawaii. Only about 10-15% are opposed, but they're vociferously opposed. They're very angrily opposed. And it's those people who, you know, get the biggest play. What has to happen, as it always has to happen, is the majority has to come in and start talking to their young nephews and nieces and cousins and daughters and so forth, who might be sons, who might be in the legislature, discussing these issues of real import.
A lot of these people have not necessarily been around those who are dying. Some have, perhaps. But is that something that you see as part of the education process, of actually being around people who would like to make that choice if that choice were available?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think this is an education process, but luckily and happily, most of the people are already there.
As you are now looking at your own life and looking at next year too, it looks a little different maybe from your perspective.
Well, when I saw you the last time I came in here.
In January,
of course, I had a very limited time to live. Who knows how long? I kept up my chemo regime. I've had 48 three-day rounds of chemo in the last 3 years, and I've outlived my diagnosis by a year. So the doctors are now looking at my situation as not being controlled or anything, but maybe the possibility for surgery now exists. And by that, I mean we're going to take a more aggressive approach to the cancer, not just chemo, but we're going to have to try to cut the cancer out of the various places it is in my body, and that's the next big objective for me.
You've been lucky enough to survive your diagnosis in ways that maybe other people who had the same diagnosis would not be able to. Some might say, though, that because you're such the exception to this, that you might also be the reason why someone might not want to be able to take their life.
You don't have to.
Right. I understand that. But the idea that that might be something that would be very different for someone who otherwise would not necessarily have some of the choices that you have.
I don't understand that question.
The sense that if you have outlived your diagnosis so well,
right,
that you now provide an example for potentially other people who might also be able to outlive the example, and for those who are critical of what someone who has the ability to choose to take his or her own life. You could see the possibility there, right? They could say, that's a good reason not to do it.
Everybody wants to live a good life. Everybody wants to live a life which is some utility. And mostly, I think, you want to live a life in which you are not in pain and in suffering. Now, in the case of cancer, at some point, you're going to hit the pain and suffering, and you're going to die. So some people are going to not want to take an advantage of a opportunity for medical aid in dying, but there will be some that will, and they should be allowed to have the right. Doctors should be able to have the right to assist patients who are dying without having to go to jail. That's what this legislation is all about. Whether or not doctors should be permitted to be around and to help people with dying at the end of their life. That's the key.
You made the point earlier that Hawaii's bill is more stringent in certain ways than even the Oregon bill that's now coming up on its 20th anniversary, or will soon. How does that better position the bill when so much criticism in some ways has been leveled at Oregon for not having
issues? I don't know how you defeat an argument with a nothing. You know, how do you prove a nothing? That's sort of like, you know, when Frank Fossey was here in the old days, he used to say that one of the things he was able to do was to keep elephants out of Hawaii, except for the occasional circus. But, you know, he didn't really keep them out. We just didn't have any, you know. So it wasn't even an issue, and that's what this is. It's not even an issue.
Well, we're going to look forward to talking to you as we go into the next legislative session.
And we're going to win next time.
Thank you, John. John Radcliffe is a stage 4 terminal cancer patient and advocate for medical aid in dying in Hawaii. He's also co-founder and president emeritus of Capital Consultants of Hawaii and is a veteran union leader, educator, writer, speaker, lecturer, and governmental and political action specialist.